Now this is a discourse which a maamar, a discourse which the Rebbe said on this Shabbat, that's Parshat Nasa. And he said it in 1965. And so let's have a look at the beginning of the Sedra. So here we're not yet at the beginning of the Sedra. We're looking at the similar configuration. You see, the point is that we've got the Levites, and the Levites are in three groups, and they are called Kahat, who is the oldest and the most special. So here we have, and Moses was from the section of Kahat. So it says, Nasu ad Rosh B'nei Kahat, take a separate census of the children of Kahat, the clan of Kahat, B'toch B'nei Levi, among the Levites, the Mishpachotam, by their families, the Beit Avotam, by the house of their fathers. And it goes on talking about various details. And then it says what they should do. Their responsibility is Kodesh HaKodeshim, the most sacred objects. So the most sacred objects are things like the golden ark and the various the shulchan, the golden table, and then the various other things, and the menorah. See, these are all the things that the B'nai Kahat, the children of Kahat, should be carrying through the desert. Now, and similarly the golden altar, and all the vessels relating, all the different, like utensils relating to all that. So that's Kahat. Then we've got, now we've got the beginning of our sentence. And it says, Nasoed Rosh B'nei Geshem Damhem. So count, take a census of the clan of Geshem among the Levites. So we've got the clan of Kahat and then the clan of Geshem. And so their job is, it says over here, they should carry the cloths of the tabernacle with its covering. And so that's all the materials, like the woven curtains. That's the job of Gershom. And then we have finally B'nai Merari. So the Merarites, they are the third clan. And what they should carry is the planks. So the sanctuary is made of planks of wood, connected together with silver sockets, which hold the planks up, which support the planks. And so that's Merari. So that's the third group of the Levites. So we've got Merari with the planks, Gershom with the curtains, and Kahat with things like the golden ark. And in the golden ark is the are the tablets of the law, which came down Mount Sinai. So that's the basic work of the Levites. And so this discourse is going to explore what that means in our lives, because everything in the Torah is eternal and has meaning for everyone in every generation. And so this is what the discourse is going to explore. So we'll have the Maamar Nigun, the melody of the discourse, and then we'll find the Hebrew text and go on. Ya ba ya 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 Hello, Rivka. Nice seeing you as well. And Rabbi. Right.
Hello, hello.
Okay, so here we have the beginning of the discourse. So this discourse was said in 1965. It wasn't edited by the Rebbe. And it was said on Shabbat, Parshat Naso, which was the 12th of Sivan. Today is the 10th of Sivan, so our Shabbat will be the 14th of Sivan, but it's very close. Naso, so count the heads of, in other words, take the number of the Levites who are in one of the three groups and the one called Gershon. Remember, this is the one who carries the curtains. The first Chabad Rebbe, who the Alter Rebbe, Rabbeinu Zakeh, the first Rebbe, he points out in his book Likutei Torah, Yesh Lavin, we should try and understand why it says with the Bnei Gershon, Gamhe, also them. And he explains the basic point of what he's saying is the Nasod Rosh. But when you say Rosh, you see, Nasoet Rosh, Nasiat Rosh, can be just simply translated as count, take a census. But literally, it means lift up the head. And that means Lahalod et Chinat HaRosh, that means lift up the aspect of the head, Lebchinat HaRatzon, to the higher level of the will, Shalamailu Min HaSeichel, which is higher than intellect. There's the head, and the head is usually used for intellect, but there's a higher dimension, the will. And that is what is called Kether, the crown. So one has wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. They are different aspects which are in the head, in the mind. And then we have something even higher, which is the crown, and that is the will. That's a higher dimension. The Ikar Halazu, and the main way in which you elevate the head, the Alidei Eitzek Torah, is through studying Torah. Shehi Bechinat Ratzona Elyon, because the Torah is the upper supernal will. It is the will of Hashem in a very exalted way. And so by the fact that a person studies Torah and he or she puts their intellect into understanding the Torah, they are connecting their mind with the divine will, which is an amazing thing that we, this little group of us in different parts of the country, we are doing this at this moment, thank God. And in more detail, Yesh Maile b'Torah gam legabei mitzvot. There is a, oh, we missed out a line, no, did we? The main elevation of the mind is through study Torah, because Torah is the upper will. And in more detail, there's a special quality of Torah, even compared with mitzvot. Now, mitzvot are tremendously important, but nonetheless, there's something that Torah has got even higher than mitzvot. Now, let's just see. Sh'amitzvot, because the mitzvot, the commandments, shegam hein ratzon, they are also the upper will of God. Hein bevchinat makif bilvad, they are a kind of surrounding energy. Ve'ena me'er begilui, doesn't shine in a revealed way, bevchinat or pnimi mamash, in a kind of internal radiance. Now, an internal radiance, let's just try to understand that. An internal radiance is something like the mind. So we are here, thank God, studying this discourse that the Rebbe said many years ago, 1965. So what's that? That's 40, that's 60, 61 years ago. So, and through a wonderful, wonderful series of circumstances of all different kinds, we have a transcript of what the Rebbe said 61 years ago, and we're able to share it across the country now. So our mind is the part of us which is able to explore what we're discussing at this moment. Now, the mind is an internal dimension of the person, and that's like an internal radiance. Whereas there are mitzvot, and the mitzvot are a surrounding radiance. They're not an internal radiance, they're a surrounding radiance. They relate to the divine will. Now, the thing about the divine will, you can know what the divine will is. And in fact, you can study a lot in order to understand it properly. But nonetheless, like, for example, all the laws of Kashrut, right? There are lots of laws, and whether this, you know, what is the right thing to do in this circumstance and that circumstance. So there's a lot of intellectual knowledge about Kashrut. But the basic concept of Kashrut is that it's the will of the divine. And that's you know, that's it's on that very exalted level. While study of Torah, which might be exploring the ins and outs of the laws of Kashrut, but it's much more layered, it's got different dimensions, there are different opinions, and they're looking here, looking there. So it's more accommodating to the intellect, and it comes into the intellect. So the thing about the upper will is that it's makif, it's surrounding. The Einu Me'er HaGilui, and the revelation of it doesn't shine in Or Pnimi Mamash, in real inner radiance. A little bit, but not really. Avodat Torah, but when we study Torah, He bechinat Or Pnimi Mamash, that is really the inner radiance. Now, Torah is also from the inwardness of Keter, the inwardness of crown. So, in other words, Torah comes from a very exalted source, but we're able to study it and discuss it. So, therefore, when speaking about the first group of Levites, that children of Kahat, they would carry the golden ark, in which were the tablets of the Ten Commandments. So it says about them, Nasod Rosh, lift up their heads. Ach gam b'nei Gershom, but also the children of Gershom, the next group of the Levites who carry the curtains, kevan shenasu et hayiriyot, since they are carrying the curtains, and the curtain is bechinat makif. The curtain isn't something that goes inside the person. The curtain is something that surrounds them in some way. That's dugmat mitzvah. And the curtains are surrounding. You see, in the sanctuary, there was the structure of the sanctuary made with the wooden planks. And then over that was made the curtain. So the curtains, they formed the roof. And they were a kind of second layer of the walls, because the wooden walls were covered on the outside by the curtain hanging down. So we have there the surrounding quality of the curtain. So these curtains are like the hamshacha, like the flow that comes from mitzvah. Now, when a person does a mitzvah, there's a flow, they're fulfilling a commandment of God. And at that moment, there's a flow from the divine which is flowing around the person. So, for example, thank God I'm sitting in a room over here which has got a mezuzah on the door. So that means there's a mitzvah of having a mezuzah. And thank God I'm in a room where the mezuzah is there on the door. There are different ways of looking at it. Is it that the doorway needs to have a mezuzah, or that the person who lives in that home has to put the mezuzah on the door. In other words, is it a duty of the person or is it a duty of the thing that the house needs mezuzah on the doors? But either way, once you have the mezuzah, there is a mitzvah that's being carried out, but it's sort of surrounding. It's not inside the person. Even when we do a mitzvah with our hand, like giving charity, right? You might have a charity box at home, hopefully, and you put a few pence or 50 pence in the charity box. You're doing a mitzvah. That's wonderful. But it's not inside. It's not in the person the same way that the mind is in the person. And when we study a piece of Torah, we're exploring it with our mind. So therefore, we've got also for B'nai Gershon, that's the children of Gershon who are carrying the curtains, which are surrounding. So, and we like the mitzvah. And so they also have to have their heads, as it were, their minds connected to Keter, to the crown, to the will, to the upper will of the divine. But it says about them, Gam Heim. Gam Heim, also them, because why does it say also them? Because at this point, it's still a surrounding radiance. And the main idea of the lifting of the head and connecting it to the divine will is with the children of Kahat, who are carrying the tablets of the Torah. And that is the whole idea of study of Torah, which we do inside our minds. And so that is something which is an inward thing. So the difference between Kahat and Gershon is that Kahat are connecting to Torah. They're carrying the objects that relate to Torah, like the golden heart with the tablets of stone with the Ten Commandments. And all that represents Torah study. And Torah study is the way in which the mind connects to a supernal spiritual source beyond, which is the divine will. And it comes down inside our mind in a way of inwardness. So, on the other hand, we have the B'nai Gershon, the next clan of the Levites, and they are carrying the curtains. So they are the ones who relate to the whole idea of mitzvah, which are a surrounding quality, a surrounding radiance like the curtains are surrounding. But in addition, that Ba'od Zot, and in addition, Shebnei Gershon, the children of Gershon, that clan of the Levites, they carry, you see, we have seven emotions. And generally, you could say that when a person carries out mitzvah, it's their emotions which are pushing him to do it. You know, do this, don't do that. These are different aspects of the emotions of the person which take expression. See, the key emotion is love of God. Because of love of God, we do the positive mitzvah that we're supposed to do, that the Torah tells us to do. We also have the other side of love is awe, is fear. When you love someone, you don't want to do anything that hurts them in any way, God forbid. So there's a sense of fear implicit in all love. So you don't want to hurt the person. So therefore, if God told us, don't do this and this, so we do not want to do that thing. So that's the negative commandment. Yes, don't eat non-kosher food, for example. So there's the negative commandment. And then there's the positive commandment, like, for example, having a mezuzah on the door or lighting candles for Shabbat. Now, the emotions that the person has inside his or her heart or the whole structure of our being, those emotions themselves can be connected above. They can be connected above to the higher emotions, which are higher than intellect, because there's an aspect of emotion that it's higher than intellect. Intellect is a certain very important level. But then there's emotion which is higher than intellect and has a tremendous force. So the idea of connecting our lower personal emotions and connecting it with the emotion, with the emotions which are higher than intellect, that is what it means, lift up the heads of the children of Gershon. And while the children of Kehat, they elevate the wisdom that is in the mind to wisdom of the crown. In other words, it's a level of wisdom which is also beyond ordinary intellect. It's a kind of divine wisdom. So here we have so far, we're going to unshare for a moment. So here we have this fascinating concept. We've looked at two of the groups of the Levites. We're going to come to the third group in a minute, who carry the planks. So far, we've dealt with the Kahat, who carry the golden ark with the tablets of the Ten Commandments, and Gershon, who carry the curtains. The next one will be Merari, who carry the planks, and we're the discourse translates this into our personal spiritual life. That we have the Kahat dimension, the study of Torah, which connects to God above in a very exalted way, and then we have the doing of mitzvot, which also connects above, but Torah goes inwardly into us, whereas the mitzvot are a kind of a radiance around the person. So it's as if there's a radiance within us from studying Torah and a radiance around us from keeping the mitzvot. And then there's going to be the third category of Merari, who carry the planks, and we're going to find out what that is. Now, at this point, are there any questions or comments? Rabbi Lou, do you have any comment to make at this stage?
No, nothing additional. I'm listening, fascinated. I apologize. I'm going to have to leave for an emergency meeting in a few minutes.
So that's why, if you have something to add, maybe add it now before you leave.
When I add something, it's usually something that just suggests itself, just when I'm, you know. No. This is it.
Okay.
Makif and Pinimi. Speaking like, you know, an Or Makif, just to say on a general point, a surrounding aura, a surrounding light, as opposed to an internal one, where the Rebbe here says Torah is internal because you understand it, you comprehend it, and Mitzvah is a surrounding light. So really, the surrounding light can be much more powerful. But because it's not internalized, it's not yours. It has a powerful effect on a person in personal life. There's like an inspiration that comes. That's not a mitzvah, that's generally a person gets inspired, and if it remains it can be very profoundly moving and inspiring, but it needs to be connected immediately to something down to earth because otherwise it disappears. So the surrounding light can have infinite force. It's not proportional, it's not bound to the abilities, limited to the abilities of the person, the individual, on the one hand. But on the other hand, it can come suddenly, it could also evaporate suddenly as a feeling. Whereas something which you acquire through effort, which is what Torah is, it means studying and internalizing and feeling and within, that is. You know, that's real. It becomes the person. And I've got to go.
Thank you
So,
very much,
good
Steve.
to see you all.
Very,
Yeah. Take
very
care.
helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
May I ask, please,
Yes.
the emotion above the intellect,
Does it have a name? And what are the emotions below the intellect then?
You see, they're the same emotions. Chesed, love, gvura, fear, severity. But when they are above intellect, they operate in a very, in takifim or they're very strong. Whereas other kinds, the emotions below intellect, they are brought into being through our intellect. So a person studies a certain thing, let's say a rare vase, yes, a Chinese vase which costs £3,000. Now, what makes this Chinese vase cost £3,000? So someone, an expert, explains to you, this is from a particular dynasty from 800 years ago, and they used to make vases in a special way, and this is a very rare example of that, and that's why it's £3,000. Okay, so you now have a certain attachment to the vase, and if you see someone pushes the vase off the table and it falls on the ground and breaks, oy, you feel very bad because of your intellect has told you all these things about the vase. But an emotion that's higher than intellect is a different kind of thing. That's where the person becomes dedicated to something, to Hashem, to Torah. And it's beyond any explanations or, extra knowledge or deeper understanding. It's beyond intellect. It's the bond from the essence of the soul to the essence of the divine.
Yes, thank you.
I actually heard a beautiful story which might illustrate this. It's a story about Rabbi Lu's father. So we just had Rabbi Lu with us just now. He had to go to another meeting, an urgent meeting. But there's a story about his father. His father, in Brooklyn, he'd come to America, very, very religious Jew. And he decided as a young man he's going to study to be a lawyer, and which is what he eventually became, Lawyer Lou. He was a famous person in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg. So now here he is, a student in the university, in the college, doing his law degree. And it was he had to come to the university on a Friday in the winter. And he had to do the exam. And then all the students were expected to wait 2 or 3 hours while the examiners marked the papers and told them whether or not they passed. So he's there waiting, and then he sees the clock. It's getting later and later, and it's the winter, and it's time for Shabbos. So he has to leave. He gets up, puts on his coat. So the person organizing the exam says to him, Lou, what are you doing? Why are you leaving? He said, well, it's time for the Sabbath. I have to get home and prepare things for the Sabbath. Well, don't you want to know the results of your exam to be qualified as a lawyer? I certainly want to know. Do you care about that? Yes, I care about it very much, but I care even more about my religion. So how are you going to find out about the exam? Well, maybe you'll send me a postcard with the information. So the examiner was dumbfounded, and Mr. Liu went home, and thank God he passed the exam, and he became a very prominent lawyer in the Orthodox Jewish community. So there you have two levels of concern, of love. So yes, he wants to be a lawyer, but even more, he wants to keep Shabbos. He wants to keep Shabbat. So even more than his desire to be a lawyer is his concern not to risk doing anything against Shabbat. So that's like two different dimensions. One is the kind of a rational love, and the other is a love which goes beyond reason, that, you know, whatever happens, I'm not going to break Shabbat. Does that help?
Of course it helps. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Now, here we go back to this text. Now, so we had reached Merari. Avo, it's in the second line. Avalavadat, but the service of the clan of Merari, yira, that's something which comes from the sense of awe, fear. Hanimshechet min harosh v'hamochin, which comes from the head and the mind. Lechach lo nema, and therefore it doesn't mention about them counting them, like elevating the head, because they've already got this sense of fear. And there's a further point that Rabbi Shneur Zalman points out. Moreh al avodah of bivchinat hiluch bligvu. When you talk about elevating the head and connecting it to the will, which is higher, it means going higher and higher without limit. And that's yavodah of bechol modecha. With all your power, you should love God bechol levavecha, with all your heart, bechol nafshecha, with all your soul, bechol moedecha. And there are many explanations. What does it mean, bechol moedecha? With everything that you've got, is one explanation. Kamoshe katuv, as it says, v'natati lecha malchim bein ha'omdin. God says to Zechariah, the prophet, he's having a vision of angels, and God says to him, those angels are standing still. But you're going to move, you're going to be walking, you're going to be moving, you're dynamic, because the Jewish soul, in relation to angels, in comparison, the angels are standing still, and the Jewish soul is rising higher and higher. Now, what does it mean, Mahalchin? What does it mean, moving, this dynamism? There are two kinds of movement. Ha'echad, one is al yedei re'uta deliba milamata. One kind of movement is from the yearning of the heart from below to above. The yearning of the heart from below to above, that is b'nei Geshem. That's b'nei Geshem who have got the quality that they are doing mitzvot, and so they connect above, and the will of God is you should do this and you shouldn't do that, and they're trying to do all that. V'hasheni al yedei Torah mitzvot. Now, another way of connecting is through learning Torah and keeping mitzvot, milamayla lamata, from above to below. V'zeh al yedei b'nei kahat, and that's through kahat, because kahat, they have this quality of Torah, and the Torah is something that flows from above downwards. So mitzvot flow from below upwards, and Torah flows from above downwards. Now, in addition, within the Torah, there are also mitzvot. So it mentions mitzvot as well, coming from above downwards. But the main quality of mitzvot is below upwards, reaching for God, so to speak, by keeping the mitzvot. And the Torah coming from above down is pouring godliness and a connection with godliness to us. And that's why it says about both of those, the idea of lifting up the head. But the idea of walking, of movement, that has to be among those which are static. Now, what's static? The planks of wood which went into the sanctuary, they are standing still. And that's Merari, that's the third clan of the Levites. And they are carrying and dealing with the planks of cedar wood which are standing there. And that is the avodah of b'chol nafshecha. That's the avodah with all your soul, shehu b'chinat hamida, which is sort of standing still, compared with b'chol moedecha, which is movement, a very dramatic movement. V'lechein lo ne'ema behem nesi'a rosh, and therefore it doesn't say about Merari that you should count them because their head does not have to be connected higher than itself. It's the way in which it functions in itself with love of God and awe of God, and through that they are able to carry out their service. So there we have these three groups of Levites, and each one suggests a different aspect of our relationship with the divine. And this is something, let me just share for a minute. This is something quite apart from the explanation within the Torah passage of Gershom, Kohat, Merari, these three groups of Levites, but the phenomenon that is being described, the idea that there's the connection of Torah on the one hand and the connection of mitzvah on the other, and the connection in terms of fear of God, awe and love, the emotional dimension, that makes up the individual. That's what a person is in relation to the divine. And that's an incredible aspect of the way in which every Jewish person, to a certain extent, every human being, but certainly every Jewish person is able to connect to God in those three dimensions with a very, very intense way. So there's the study of Torah, which comes from above to below. There's the keeping of the mitzvah, which are like reaching from below to above, that we are elevating our lives by making them conform to the laws of the Torah. So we don't just cook a meal. We cook a meal, which we prepare a meal, which is kosher, which follows the laws of kashrut. And so that is elevating it. And so that's the movement from below upwards. And then we have the emotional side of the person, ahava v'yira, love of God and awe of God. And that is b'nei merari. Okay, so that sort of summarizes where we've got so far. Are there any comments at this point? Yona, you want to say something?
Nothing that comes to mind yet.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So let's go further. Right. Now, in Osber, in chapter 2, the Rebbe asked the question, Ach, tzarich lahavim, but we have to understand something. Harei yadua, it's well known, shekol inyan nesiyat b'nei Yisrael, the whole idea of the Jewish people traveling, ima mishkan v'kelab, with the sanctuary and all its vessels, b'midbar in the desert, Hachel miyetziat Mitzrayim, which began when they came out of Egypt, and as soon as they were traveling in the desert, then they came to Mount Sinai, they got the Ten Commandments, then later on they built the sanctuary, and then they traveled from there all around the desert, till finally, Ad Boam El Yarden Yerecho, till they came to the River Jordan, just by Jericho, Sha'az Nichnasu La'eretz Bovar Chava, and then they entered this beautiful and broad land of the land of Israel. All of this was Hayah Kedei Lifol Etzel B'nei Yisrael, is in order to bring about in every individual Jew Inyan HaHiluch, the idea of movement, spiritual movement. Ve'eichav Shalomah, how is it possible to say She'etzel B'nei Merari, that for the clan of Merari of the Levites, lo hayta avodah b'chinat hiluch, there wasn't a service which had this movement, because the planks are like static in a sense. V'hainu de'ime yoda avodah b'nei Merari hayta masar kashya mishkan. Even though the job of the Merari Levites was to carry the planks of the sanctuary. In themselves, they are large planks of wood which stand up and they stand still. Nonetheless, they still need some kind of quality of movement, not ordinary movement, infinite movement, because of the journey, which was taking place for all the different bits and pieces of the sanctuary. It was being moved through the desert, and the Merari people were moving it, were taking care of it to make sure it moved. And through the fact of having this sanctuary, we have the divine presence dwelling among us. And all that includes the planks of the sanctuary. And in order for the sanctuary to exist, you need the planks. So we must say, also for the Merari Levites, they also had movement, unlimited movement, as we learned from the phrase Nasod Rosh, lift up the head. Since their service in carrying the planks of the Mishkan was through carrying the planks on wagons, the Lok of Negeshon, not like the Gershon group of Levites, who also had a certain level of carrying. They had to carry the curtains, and so they had to carry the curtains to the Agalon, which was a bit of a step for them to go, carrying these large, very large curtains. But eventually they carried them and then got them to the wagon where they were able to put the curtains and carry it then. Whereas for Merari, they simply put the large planks of wood straight into the wagons. They didn't actually carry it themselves at all. However, what the Rebbe says here, it's like, it's interweaving this imagery with the psychological and spiritual reality within the person. So they are putting the planks of wood directly onto the wagons. And the Rebbe says, now, the movement that's kashur im bechinat agalot and is connected to the wagons, which hints at the animal soul. So in fact, the work of Merari is like dealing with the animal soul and taking the animal soul and elevating it with its feelings of love of God and awe of God. And that is also movement, because in that mode, there is a movement, and it can be an infinite movement with a very intense love of the divine and a very intense awe of the divine. So there we have these different dimensions of these three aspects of our relationship with the divine all the time, thousands of years later. Now, section Gimel, V'yuvan, and this will be understood, B'hakdin bi'a inyan avodah de'hiluch b'ligvu. For us, first of all, understanding, what does it mean, movement which is unlimited? Sh'naseh, now here comes a very striking thing. How do you get movement which is of an unlimited quality, instead of standing still? So there's a movement, a positive movement, which leaps. It's a tremendous, powerful leap. How do we get that? And it's unlimited. And that contrasts with the angels that we had before. They are the ones who are standing. And the prophet, or each individual Jew, is moving. It's able to move. How do we get into this mode of movement? Now, this is a very striking, powerful concept. That comes particularly from descent lower and lower into a very low dimension, through falling down, so to speak, into a low dimension. We come to the ability to jump up to a higher dimension. שיש בזה שלושה עניינים, and there are three aspects of this. עניין האחד, the concept number one, עצם הילוך בלי גבול, the very movement, which is unlimited, שהוא עניין אהבה להשם, the love to God of the nefesh ha-bahamit, of the animal soul. You see, the achabir ra, after the animal soul has been purified a little bit. You see, in its raw state, the animal soul basically wants animal things. It wants to eat, it wants to procreate, it wants to do this, wants to do that. It's powerfully interested in things that animals literally themselves are interested in. However, we can transform our animal soul, we can elevate it. The process of civilization, quite apart from Torah, is a process of taming our brute instincts so that they become more elevated, okay? They can become, adapted into different kinds of activity. There can be the same sense of competition, for example. You know, if two dogs are fighting over the same bone, or the same she-dog. So there's a sense of competition. Now that sense of competition, you know, in the civilized person, you know, can be wanting to come top in the exam, very, you know, wanting to win the prize at the Venice Biennale for one's artwork or whatever it might be. You know, there's this competitive instinct, only it's on a more, it's not just trying to get a bone, it's something more sophisticated. Now, in the case of Avodat Hashem, serving God, then the love, let's say the power of love, there's a tremendous power of love in the animal soul, which left to itself might be quite a dangerous phenomenon and has to be continuously reared back, held back, and various checks and balances installed so that it doesn't do the wrong thing. But that power of love can be refocused into something spiritual, something holy, the divine creating the world, the divine giving the Torah, the divine who's the essence of the universe, the divine that every leaf that falls from a tree is an expression of the divine. So that can be that can be an emotion of the animal soul, but it's now in a kind of more elevated mode, an elevated mode. And since the root of the animal soul comes from, now in Kabbalistic terms, this is one of the big paradoxes about life, is that the animal soul, which is low, potentially, it's low and coarse and crass, the source of the animal soul is from a very exalted realm called the world of chaos. And that world of chaos, which is the source of the animal soul, is actually higher than the source of the divine soul. The divine soul is very holy and good, beautiful. But the source of the, it's from the world of tikkun, the world of repair. But the animal soul comes from an even higher source. That's why it's specifically with the animal soul that there is this enormous, tremendous power. So there's a verse here about the ox, and the ox is able to achieve a tremendous amount when it's pulling the plow. Yes, that's true, but it means the animal soul can achieve wonderful things when it's harnessed in love of the divine. Shahu inyan ahava bli gvul, and the animal soul can achieve an unlimited kind of love. So from coming from a very low dimension, it can achieve a very exalted dimension of love. The inyan hasheni, and the second aspect about this, shekavanat ahiluch bli gvul, the reason for the movement, the unlimited movement, hu kadei sheyiyeh acherecha narutza, is in order that, now you see there are three steps. which the Rebbe very often mentions. It comes from earlier Hasidic teachings, that first of all, it's a verse. It says, Moshcheni, draw me, in the singular, not us, but draw me. Acharecha narutza, we will run after you, in the plural, we will run after you. And then the verse finishes, the king will take me to his bedroom chamber. This is a verse in the Song of Songs. The king symbolizes God. The woman in the story is the Jewish people or the Jewish individual. So the first thing is, draw me. Moshcheni, draw me. Now that me is the divine soul. So God attracts the divine soul and the divine soul follows God. That's like what happened at going out of Egypt. God attracted the divine soul and the divine soul went free. Yes, the animal soul and the body also went free, but it wasn't yet fleshed out clearly. What did go free definitely is the divine soul. Now, then after you, we will run. We means the divine soul and the animal soul together. We will run after God. So it's now that the divine soul has been schlepped out of Egypt, it's been pulled out of Egypt, out of the realm of impurity and so on. Now it wants to run after God, and it runs after God together with the animal soul. And through that, and because of the extra power that is in the animal soul, we come to Mount Sinai, to the giving of the Torah, which is like the bedchamber of God, and the Jewish individual and the Jewish people as a whole enter that intimate closeness with the divine. So that's just so that's the background to this phrase. So we get this idea of we in the plural will run after you, that the divine soul, which comes from the realm of tikkun, it comes from the lower realm of healing, lower than the realm of chaos, which is higher, which is the source of the animal soul. So the divine soul will be in a movement also of unlimited movement because of this jump from below to above. Now that's a fascinating thing, that in order to get some aspect of infinity into our lives, there has to be a jump from below to above. The Inyan HaShlishi, and the third idea, after the movement, the unlimited movement has been established for the divine soul, as it says, Acharecha Narutza, we will run after you, we in the plural, animal and divine soul together. Then the divine soul is elevated to its true source, and its true origin, as it relates just purely to the divine soul. And that is what happens at the end, Heviani in the singular. He brought me in the singular into, the king brought me into his bedchamber. That's what happens through the fact that the divine soul elevates the animal soul. Then the divine soul soars on a deeper level with God and enters into a more intense intimacy with the divine than it could have done by itself. Now, I'm going to stop sharing here because this is quite a complicated thing that we've just been exploring. And it would be nice if anyone doesn't understand exactly what it's saying, we can try and clarify it together. It's expressed very briefly. You should know this is a very short discourse. And it's not short because the content is short. The pages are short. There are a few pages. And we've actually reached the last page. But it means that it is not going into explanations, lengthy explanations, which would make us understand it better. So we're talking here about a process that's of the animal soul and the divine soul moving towards the divine. And we start off with the divine soul, as it were, breaking out of Egypt. And then we have the animal soul and the way in which the animal soul becomes refined. And so instead of it having animal loves, it has spiritual loves, sacred loves. And then the animal soul and the divine soul, they move together. And because the divine soul has sparked this transformation in the animal soul, the divine soul itself comes to a greater sense of unity with the divine. And all this is a complex and intense process, which perhaps takes place for a person over a period of time, where there are changes that take place in the person. What is it that switches the person on? And it could be that the person's focus of attention changes from certain aspects of life to certain other aspects of life. And that is the kind of transformation that the animal soul is undergoing, that it's a different kind of thing that the animal soul wants and that the person as a whole wants. And that can lead the person to a more exalted and intimate relationship with God. Okay, so are there any points about that?
Perhaps I could ask, first, it's lovely to see you, Rabbi. I find this paragraph to be very hard to understand, some aspects of it. It sounds like a very, very high level of avodah, that even from the beginning, the Nefesh HaBehemoth has already been transformed. It sounds like it's the final process in this paragraph is shedding of the animal soul completely, even in its transformed state. Is that correct?
Well, it's the transformation of the animal soul, so it becomes an adjunct to the divine soul. So that's the quality of itavcha, transformation. So it loses the designation animal soul because it's being completely transformed.
It's all okay. And then you say, when we say acharecha narutza, it sounds like we're switching which one is the acharecha. It's not that the animal soul, the acharecha. Then I think he's saying, I could be incorrect, the nefesh elokis is then is going on acharecha narutza. No?
You mean who's saying it? You see, acharecha means after you, God. So
right.
They are both running after God. So the divine
right.
soul and the animal soul are running together, and the divine soul is meanwhile elevating the animal soul. And that represents the 7 weeks of the Omer, the counting the Omer, where we refine the seven aspects of the animal soul.
Okay. Because I read it as Shagama Nefesh Elokit. That the sounds like the Nefesh Bahamas is guiding the Nefesh Elokis.
Well, it's due to the, it's certainly due to the transformation of the animal soul that the divine soul gets extra bounce, so to speak. Yeah, so it is a composite movement. It's a very subtle thing. I mean, what intrigues me is the way there is a kind of a concept of a fall downwards in order to climb upwards. That's and in fact, that's brought out in Tanya in the introduction to Sha'ir Ve'emunah, Gate of Unity and Faith. It talks there about the soul wanting to climb to a higher level, but in between the lower and the higher level, there's a kind of a fall. And so this concept of a fall as giving bounce to the soul and the ability to climb to altogether higher levels. So it means not being a portrait. There's this idea, a portrait is always the same. You look at it in the summer, the winter, it's always exactly the same. But a Jew serving God is not a portrait. We struggle. We go from one extreme to another. We climb higher. We fall lower. All these are the ways in which we are moving. And by the very fact that we want to climb higher, we sometimes fall lower, but then we transform that fall into the spring, which enables us to climb to a much higher level than would have been before. It's certainly talking about the paradox of service of God. It's not simply a matter that God tells us 613 commandments and we tick them off one by one. Yeah, done this, done that, done the other. Yeah, that's not what, oh, I can't do this one because there's no temple. All right, no problem. No, you can't do it because there's no temple. Yearn for the temple.
Right. It almost sounds like the right, like you mentioned, the chinuch katan sounds like the second step in the ladder, and the third part is like shar yichud v'amunah. After the first part is the transforming the Nefesh Bahamas and the Likutei Maharim is what came to my head. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so Yonah is speaking about this introduction to Gate of Unity and Faith, the second section of Tanya, and the way it's describing different kinds of service of God. And certainly the end is a lead in to the actual 12 chapters of the Gate of Unity of Faith, where we think about God's relationship with the world, and that inspires us. Yeah, that's a beautiful way of seeing it. All right, so let's see, unless someone else would like to make a comment. Let's see now this, what I believe is the last page. Now, according to this, we can now explain what's the difference between Kahat, Gershon, and Merari, these three different groups of the Levites. What's the real difference between them? Merari, for Merari, those are the ones who carry the planks. Agalot, and they carry the planks on wagons. So for them, the movement, the unlimited movement, was only with the animal soul, which is what is represented by the wagons. The wagon represents the animal soul. It doesn't cause them themselves to move, in the divine soul. See, in other words, Merari is like someone who has very powerful emotions and prays in a very deep way and is filled with an emotion of love and awe of the divine. And it's a channeling of the animal soul, the love and awe of the animal soul, and it's channeling it into a beautiful expression in prayer. But that's what he's achieved, or she's achieved, with the animal soul. What about the divine soul? What about the full person? It's a very important thing that the person is praying in a deep way. But where do you go from there? The Elohim of the Negeshon, whereas when you have the ones who are doing the mitzvah, there's also for them the idea of acharecha narutza. It's not just the animal soul by itself. It's the animal soul with the divine soul, and that is that the movement bligvul that they're achieving, the unlimited movement, is both in the animal soul, which is carrying in wagons. And they are carrying the curtains in wagons, and that represents the animal soul. And also with the divine soul, the fact that sometimes at a certain stage they are carrying the curtains on their own backs, on their shoulders, in order to bring them to the wagon. And for Kahat, there was an even higher level of bringing me into the bedroom of the king. And that is the movement, the unlimited movement that comes from the true source of the divine soul, which is completely beyond. Well, this relates to what you said, Jonah. So that is completely beyond the animal soul. And now the animal soul is represented by wagons. But the main task of what the Levites of Kahat had to carry was the golden ark, and the golden ark, which represents Torah, could not be carried on a wagon. It had to be carried on their shoulders. It doesn't say that in the text over here, but that's what it means. The wagon, they didn't have wagons because they had to carry the things they had to carry had to be carried on their shoulders. And so that is the deep bond with God, which is achieved at Shavuot, and the festival of Shavuot last week, which is the last Shabbat and Friday, which is this entry into Mount Sinai and getting the Torah from God. So that's the higher level. So if we're going to look at those three levels from below upwards, we've got the emotional dimension, then we've got the doing of the mitzvot, and then we've got even something higher than that, the learning of Torah, which connects us right to the intimacy of God. And yesh lohosif b'zeh, one can add to this, that in general, the idea of unlimited movement, which is achieved through the descent below, right? So here's this fascinating concept that in order to move above, we need to descend below. In the service of sifting the animal soul, in other words, some people might not want to have any connection with the animal soul. The animal soul is too impure, too dirty. But no, we have to reach down to the animal soul and use it in a positive way. So that is something. So the true transformation is going to be revealed in the future. And then there will be revealed the greatness of the body over the soul. Haguf ala neshama, the greatness of the body, that the physical body itself has got such an intense holiness. In a sense, it's even more than the soul. That in the future, the soul will drink in energy, spiritual energy from the body. Now, this is just a potential, something we can learn about it, something concealed. But it's a concealment which is actually there, right? There are different kinds of concealment. One kind of concealment is that the thing isn't really there at all. But this is the kind of concealment that it is there, but it's just hidden. And it's close to practical life. And not like the fire which is in the coal, that in order to show the fire, you have to, sorry, and not like the fire which is in the flint. You see, there's fire in a coal. When you have fire in a coal, all you need to do to reveal the fire is to blow it a little bit and the flame shows itself. But there's also fire in a flint. How do you get the fire out of a flint? How do you reveal it? You bang it with a piece of metal or something like that, or another piece of flint, and the spark comes out. So the sages look at that as if the spark was always inside the flint. So, but it was hidden there. And in order to reveal it, you have to hit it. But this, we're talking about something much closer to the surface, like the fire in the coal that you just blow on it a little bit and then the flame shows itself. And so all the things of the future, of La'atid Lavo, they are in a way of that I wait for them every day, I yearn for them. And when the Jewish people will finally carry out repentance to the full, at once they will be revealed, as the sages tell us. And that moment of repentance is one moment, in 1 second, that transformation. And that transformation can take place at any point. And so that is the end of this brief but interesting discourse. Okay, are there any points to end before I turn off the recording? Okay, so I'm